afternoon, listeners. This is Rhonda Harrison broadcasting with Roadmap for Seekers from Red Feather Lake, Colorado. Today's guest is Joseph Keringer. He's a didgeridoo sound therapist, and didgeridoo sound therapy is a holistic health and healing modality used for adjunct, supportive, and primary treatment of a wide range of health and wellness issues. Didgeridoo sound therapy, also known as didgeridoo harmonic therapy, is the application of sound generated by the didgeridoo over a client with the intention of producing healing results. The term harmonic references the broad range of harmonic frequencies that the didgeridoo is capable of producing. This practice is also commonly referred to as didgeridoo sound healing. But in typical sound healing practices, there is less attention paid to the keys and frequencies of the instruments, and the focus leans heavily on the intention of the practice. Didgeridoo helps people to achieve healing results through principles, ultrasound therapy, energetic entertainment, and meditation to the production of tones that range from the ultra-low inaudible of 0 hertz to the 1,000 hertz brainwave frequencies. This harmonic waveforms resonate in a similar frequency to that of a Sanskrit om. And with that, we'll bring Joseph into the studio. Good afternoon, Joseph.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Yeah, and thank you for accepting to be on the show today. there's just so many questions about the didgeridoo. I guess first let's start with how you got started in using the didgeridoo and playing the didgeridoo, and then how you've developed this harmonic therapy.
Sure. So in towards the end of 1996, it was like late fall, early winter, I woke up from a dead sleep, sat up saying, I'm going to play the didgeridoo. And I didn't really know what one was. I actually knew that I had seen it as a kid in Crocodile Dundee, but what I thought I saw and was a didgeridoo was actually a bull roar, the thing that he spins over his head. So I really didn't know what one was. And about 6 months later, I was at a shop in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and there was a basket of didgeridoos, and I knew what they were because there was actually a sign that said didgeridoo over the top. And I picked one up out of the basket, put it to my mouth, and I played it, and I actually made a perfect drone. And the woman looked from around the corner and said, do you play the didgeridoo? And I said, no. And she said, yes, you do. And I held it up and went, yes, I do. And I ended up buying that instrument. And it turns out that it was part of a group of instruments that were made in 97. And earlier in 97, those instruments were made with a group of people that had ended up on Bill Harney's land, and Bill Harney was the first Aboriginal man to receive land rights back on behalf of this tribe from the Australian government. And they had done a ceremony at one point where they had put out to the universe that they wanted all of these people to come to their land, and they were going to teach them how to make didgeridoos and make didgeridoos with them and send them back to where they came from. And this guy, Bill, Rob Harvey, ended up breaking down on Bill's land, and Rob was from the Portsmouth, New Hampshire area. And he broke down on his land for 4 months and made all these didgeridoos and came back. And I bumped back into him in the 2000, 2001 was when I met Rob for the first time. And I was talking about this didgeridoo I had. He said, you know, I made that instrument in Australia. I'm like, no way. He's like, yeah, really. And so, I mean, just the fact that we even crossed paths later. So that instrument was actually the didge that I first started playing and played musically for years. At the time when I first got it, I was the bar manager of a blues bar and blues and jazz bar. So because I could play, and I actually figured out circular breathing in about a week and a half, and no one told me I was supposed to circular breathe with it. It just instinctively felt right. And started circular breathing. One of the guys that I was talking to was a sax player at the bar. A couple weeks after I started circular breathing, told him about the instrument, and he said, oh, I know what the didgeridoo is. Can you circular breathe? And I'm like, yeah. And he was amazed. He's like, go get it. So I ran across the street where I live from the bar, grabbed the didge, brought it over, and started playing. And he said, you're playing on Refried Zen tonight. And I said, okay. You know, and that was actually the start of me playing out musically. So I hadn't been playing the didgeridoo for a full month, and I had already started sitting in at that point with blues and jazz acts as they started to come to the club. And I did that until 1999 when I played with my first DJ and started sitting in with DJs during a dance, straight up electronic dance music sets. And then in 2004 was when a guy who was working for me had been watching a special on VH1 about celebrity spa and wellness practices. And at that point, it turned out that, that was in November of 2003. He came into work and started telling me about it. And it turned out that Leonardo DiCaprio was hiring a didgeridoo player to come out to his house once a week and play on him while he laid on a shiatsu mat next to his pool. And at first when he told, the guy who worked for me, his name, Marty, and I would get back to work. And then like the next day he came and he started talking about it again. And I was like, okay, wait, I get it. There's something here. And so I went home and started researching this idea of using the didgeridoo for holistic purposes. And for really, when I first started looking at it, it was really a no touch form of sound massage is what I was trying to find out if it was possible. And there wasn't a lot of information there. There was one doctor in Australia who had listed a bunch of side effects. Side effects may be relief for muscle tension, muscle knotting, migraine, insomnia. And he didn't want to say effect, because if you say effect, then you're responsible for claiming effects. But if you say side effect, then there's no accountability to it. And then there was a DidShop spelled with a J, DIDJSHOP.com, which had the Didgeridoo Healing Form. And it was really those two resources that I started diving into back in winter of 2003. And then by February 2004, after doing a bunch of practice sessions and researching as much as I could, that was when I launched my practice.
Very nice. And with the didgeridoo, I know that circular breathing for some people is really difficult and they don't quite understand how to do it. Like, I play the didgeridoo and I still have yet to get to the circular breathing part, but I use it because I have sleep apnea so that I don't have to use a machine to build up the back of my throat muscle.
How is that? And it's interesting. I've read the British Journal of Medicine papers on that. I have a lot of students who use the didgeridoo for sleep apnea treatment. How has that worked out for you? I mean, I've heard really good things from my students that have used it for that. Is it working well for you?
It's been working very well, to the point that
awesome.
Next month when I go to see my pulmonologist, he's like, I think I know what a didgeridoo is, but I'm not positive. And he goes, and I've never seen anyone get better from sleep apnea like you have without having surgery or something. And I'm like, the only thing I'm doing different is that I'm playing the didgeridoo and I'm not taking all the medications for the asthma stuff anymore. Yeah, and it's quite productive. I mean, I really like it in that it's...
Oh, go ahead.
Go on ahead.
I would say all of my sleep apnea students that follow the recommended 30 minutes a day that have done that, or I mean, and they do, you know, three to five times a week, they've all seen improvements. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it's a weakness of a muscle in the back of the throat.
Right, exactly. And playing the didgeridoo builds up all of those muscles again.
Mm-hmm.
So you're asking about the circular breathing. So really it's a bit of patting your head and rubbing your belly at the same time. And what people, the first mysticism that people have to get over with circular breathing is one, real recognizing that you're not breathing in and out at the same time. Physically impossible. You can't actually do that. And then once you, the circular part is breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth, the circle.
Mm-hmm.
When you need to take another breath, you use your cheeks like a bellows in a bagpipe to push the air out of your mouth while you're breathing in through your nose. Now, one of my students who had taken a lesson in Australia with a didgeridoo master didgemaker teacher, Aboriginal gentleman in Australia, how he taught his students, and I've used this with mine over the years, if you fill your mouth up with water and fill it up so that your cheeks are really big and bulging so you look like a fish, and you start to spit the water out through a narrow stream out of your mouth. And so doing this outside or in the shower is really the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to breathe in through your nose. So practice breathing in and out through your nose while you're pushing that water out of your mouth. And another exercise I use with my students is to fill your cheeks up with just air and feel the air pressure and hold air pressure inside of your cheeks while you breathe in and out through your nose, and allow that, your mouth to hold that. Because what happens is we've never used our muscles to push the air. Where most people don't use the muscles in your face to push air out of your mouth. So when you go to breathe, the body's reflexive response is to close off your mouth. And or if you go to breathe out, you go to breathe in, it doesn't your mouth stays connected to your trachea, and what you have to do is close off your mouth from your trachea, which is the epiglottis, which is that little flap that covers mm-hmm. the trachea. So you're trying to recondition evolution to a certain extent, and once you can do that, and you have to do it, it has to become reflexive, so you can't really, you almost can't think about it to do it. It's like shooting a free throw from the free throw line playing basketball.
mm-hmm. But that makes sense, to be able to hold water in your mouth and to breathe in, and then continue it, you know, and to continue to let the water out of your mouth. I've never heard of doing it that way to learn it, but I think that would be easier to learn that way than some other ways that people have tried to teach me.
And what that does is it gives you essentially the water acts like air weight, but it's weighted, so you can actually feel where you normally can't feel air in your mouth. Now you can feel the water mm-hmm. replacing the air.
Very good. And then you do harmonics and different keys and frequencies with the didgeridoo. Can we talk about the frequencies and how they vary?
Absolutely. So each didgeridoo has the potential to have a key, and that, you know, you can tune it to be just like a guitar string or a piano has different keys or different notes in essentially different keys. You can tune a didgeridoo, and it's determined by the length and diameter of the instrument determines the key. So key of C is generally long of like 52 inches long at an inch and a quarter is of the average diameter. Now with eucalyptus mm-hmm. didgeridoos, which are what I play predominantly, it depends on traditionally a didgeridoo is a piece of eucalyptus tree trunk or tree branch that's been naturally hollowed out by termites. So you don't have the ability to control the internal diameter precisely, which is actually a good thing because that gives you all of the wonderful warmth and subtleties that the instrument can produce with all those little termite condos inside of it. But yeah, so the length and diameter of the instrument determines the key. And in the work that I do, I have a full, I have a full chromatic set of didgeridoos, so I can play any note in eucalyptus, and I also have a couple slide digits so you can adjust the length to determine the key. And our subtle energy system is broken up into seven, according to the Ayurvedic tradition, seven primary energy centers, and each one of those energy centers or chakras has a seed sound, which is the most common one that people know is crown, which is om. And that seed sound has a key. And in the case of crown or om, it's the key of B. So you would play that note in the didgeridoo if you were working on that energy center.
Very nice. And then when you work with people, how do you use the sound therapy? Do you play it over them, around them, in the same room with them?
Yeah, so for group sessions, what I'll do is I'll organize a group of people and play to the room. And those are the chakra workshops, the mind-body connection, the journey workshops. For a one-on-one private session, what we'll do is the client will, and up until this year, I've used a cot that's been 18 inches off the ground, and it's interesting because another colleague of mine who has a thermography practice in Byfield, Massachusetts, where she does medical thermography, she has one of those zero-gravity chairs, the beach chairs, and she wanted to do a session in one of those, and I'm actually going to be switching over to the zero-gravity chairs, though, with zero-gravity, because what it does is it allows you to play underneath but creates a sound egg, if you will, whereas playing on the cot, you were playing underneath long ways, but when you're sitting in the anti-gravity chair, it actually allows the sound to encapsulate you fully in almost like a pod. And so we'll build the session based on what the person is working on or dealing with at the time. So I have a client who has been dealing with chronic grief, showing physical symptoms of bronchitis, persistent colds, things like that, or lung congestion. That all is symptomatic in traditional Chinese medicine of grief, sadness residing in the lungs. So what we'll do is we'll build a session around the key of F, which is the heart chakra, which has the seed sound that produces the F, and work to clear the energetic stagnation out of the lungs, support it with any other additional keys in the energy centers that might be also being affected by whatever grief, sadness they're dealing with. A lot of times you'll deal with like a first chakra thing because of safety and security of self and family, usually tied into stuff with heart. So we'll actually score the session based on their individual needs and what they're working on.
Well, that's really good because, I mean, I've done serum therapy where I've laid down where a conch shell's been played over me, and it's not exactly the same, but it still uses circular breathing, and the frequencies are similar. But is there other instruments that you've used besides the didgeridoo that are a breath instrument?
Actually, you know, for my sound therapy work, the only other instrument that I use other than the dig is I'll occasionally use, I have two modern-made seven metal Tibetan singing bowls. And I have one in crown and one in first chakra. And occasionally I'll break those out when I'm working with a client, depending on the type of stagnation that we're dealing with. But generally speaking, 99% of the time I'm just using didgeridoos in the work that I do.
That's very nice. Do you want us to play one of your piece sound bites that you sent me, either Reflections or the First Chakra? Which one would you prefer first?
Actually, let's go ahead and play the First Chakra so people can get a sense of the meditative piece.
Okay. Thank you. listeners, that was a part of the first chakra didgeridoo playing, and Joseph is going to explain it to us as to how he uses that in a therapy session with clients.
So the chakra and space clearing CD, which that came off of, that's the first chakra meditation. We had put that together, and I say we, my musical partner, who I've been performing with since 2008, is a gentleman named Josh Harris, who, amongst many things he's done in major label recording, he toured with Seal for a season of corporate events as his music director and keyboardist. And Josh is just an amazing composer. And 2 years ago, we got together on that, or 2 summers ago, and what I wanted to do was take my solo dij chakra meditation CD and create a fully scored version of those tracks. So Josh did all of everything other than the didgeridoo in that track is something that is what Josh produced to go along with my dij playing. And the idea behind that is, you know, the quality of sound inside of our environment, we don't necessarily think about on a day-to-day basis. You know, but we think about things like feng shui, and with basic feng shui, you know, if you have a perfectly laid out home that has all of the chi flowing the right way and the energy flowing the right way, but someone puts a jackhammer outside your house, you no longer have good feng shui. So the idea of the soundscapes were to create space clearing and room clearing tones and vibrations. And then the second disc of that album is just the solo dij that you can use for chakra clearing work, energetic clearing work solo on your own, in a very similar way to what I would do in a group workshop for a private session.
Very nice. And so you and Josh work together to develop these different CDs that you have. And can you also give the listeners your contact information?
Absolutely. So my sound therapy website is didgetherapy.com and stitchtherapy.com. And my musical website for the more musical stuff that I do with Josh Harris is actually Table Syndicate, TableSyndicate, just like it sounds, Table Syndicate, mm-hmm. no weird spelling.com. And we tour and perform both the down-tempo world music stuff together, and we also tour and do a combination of the world music and the meditation tracks together, and then we also do a more electronic dance music-oriented performance as well that we do at festivals and nightclubs.
Oh, okay. So
all using the same didgeridoos.
Yeah, so you do trance work and that type of stuff too as well.
Yes.
Very nice. Let's try to listen to your second piece and see if it'll play a little better than the first one. And listeners, this audio of this radio show will be ready about 10 to 20 minutes after the show, and then I'll have time to upgrade the sound quality for you, so, and then you can download it and use it any way you'd like. Here we go with the Dig Reflections. Listeners, if you have any questions that you would like to ask Joseph, feel free to call in at 1-347-838-9142 and press 1 once and you'll be put in the queue. So, Joseph, how do you put together a beautiful musical piece like that? Do you do your part first and then let Josh hear it and then he puts something together with it, or do you guys just freestyle play and it comes together?
Actually, that's interesting. We've done a little bit of all of that, but for those tracks, that song comes off the double disc album Bourgeois Bohemian, which has a studio versions of the songs, and then we actually recorded three different performances on the 2014 tour, and all of those are available on iTunes and Amazon. But that track there. What happened was Josh actually came up with an idea for the song and sent it over to me. And then, so I'll go back in afterwards and create my my ditch parts. And he really makes it easy for me. I always give Josh a lot of credit for the music that he's provided for us, because it just, he makes it so much fun for me to play my ditch to such great music.
And it seems to really resonate with the earth and with nature. And I'm sure you do. Do you do seminars or something like that where you come and play and it's done in a outdoor setting?
Oh, you know, I have. Interestingly enough, I don't get to play outdoors probably as often as I would like to. But we've done. You know, with both the music and my sound therapy work, I played outside. I mean, one of the most beautiful musical venues that I ever played at was several summers ago, getting the opportunity to play at Whistler Olympic Park on a stage that had been set up at the bottom of one of the ski slopes next to the lodge, and just being in such an amazing setting there in British Columbia, surrounded by mountains and glaciers and trees, and it's a completely different feeling when you have the opportunity to perform outside. And I enjoy it greatly.
And it sounds like you are quite gifted at it, and considering
Thank
that
you.
You've never formally taken lessons or anything, and you've, you know, just learned as you went, so to speak, it seems to be a very natural talent for you.
Thanks. I really describe the way that I play the didge as the way I wish I could have played the saxophone. I was a sax player in junior high school band. When I was actually at the blues bar, I had the opportunity to meet some of the great blues legends. Lesser known to the mainstream, but amongst the blues community, like some. Guys like Sweet Roy Jones and Big Jack Johnson, Katie Bell, these were people that not everyone knows the names, but in the blues community, everybody knew their names. And when Sweet Roy found out that I played, that I had a saxophone, you know, I won't even really say that I played, I had a saxophone. He got all mad at me. He's like, you got to bring that saxophone into the bar and you keep it back there, because next time I ask you if the sax is back there, I want it back there so I can have you come sit in with us. And he actually did that and started getting me way out of my comfort zone, you know, because I could only play, I could play G blues, that was it. And so when I got the didgeridoo and you took away the fingerings and allowed me to just sing and play what was in my soul, what I'm feeling immediately and not have to think about anything, that's really what that is. That's years and years of sax lessons and wishing I could play a different way than I was actually able to play technically, and then being able to release all of that in through a didgeridoo.
The reason I chuckled is because I used to play the saxophone as well. And
you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and then someone said to me the other day, well, what's the difference between a saxophone and a didgeridoo? And I said, well, your lips are tighter with a saxophone versus the didgeridoo, where you tend to relax them a little bit more, you know, other than in your cheeks and the way your lips, touch, but it's not the same type of instrument because one's a reed instrument and one you use your whole mouth on,
Well, and then combined with the fact that the saxophone has the ability to play 1, 2, 3, 3, possibly 4 octaves if you can produce overtones, and has all of those various notes, and you've got to focus on key, with being in tune, and all of those different things. With a didgeridoo, people just tell me what key the song is in, and I can go.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I went to a jazz concert the other night, and there was a young man playing the saxophone, and he was quite good. And I told him, I said, don't ever stop playing it. I said, because later in life you're going to want to, and you're not going to be able to produce the same sound. Because I've been trying to pick the saxophone back up again. And then as I mentioned that to you, I thought, well, I had to do circular breathing when I did my saxophone. Especially when I did the baritone sax, because it required so much breath.
It's actually harder. It's harder on a saxophone, in my opinion. And I had a I had a sax teacher who had taught me the theory of circular breathing when I was like 14. Because of so this helped set me up to be able to play the didgeridoo. And really, the saxophone was the foundation of really allowing me to play the didgeridoo the way that I do. And by cosmic design or total coincidence, but this sax teacher that I had, we were talking about Kenny G, and he started explaining to me what circular breathing was because of what Kenny G was doing with all the circular breathing at that point. And so I was never able to do it on a saxophone when I was a kid. Hung on to the lesson in the back of my mind, and then years later, and I probably picked up a tenor saxophone probably about 4 or 5 years ago just to see if I could circular breathe on it. And after all of these years of playing the didgeridoo and circular breathing, having a couple times where I've gone like 45, 55 minutes on one circular breathing cycle, I can circular breathe all day. It still took me about 5 minutes to be able to do it on a tenor saxophone before I could figure it out.
And that was one of the things that I was noticing. And it looks like we have a caller that has a question for you. Just one moment. Good afternoon, caller. Would you like to speak with Joseph?
Yes.
Okay, go on ahead and ask your question or comment.
Hi, yeah.
Hello.
I think my adrenals have been very exhausted lately. What can you suggest?
With everything like that, depending on what you're dealing with, obviously always, take the time to consult a doctor. And once you've done that, if you're looking at a holistic approach to it, your adrenals fall into your third chakra, and that area. So I would look at doing supportive work with that first chakra. Third chakra is it generally deals with your issues of self-esteem, self-image, where you can have issues with the adrenal glands are one of several things that can come up inside of there. If you have an idea of what's been stressing them, you can work to reduce that or set the intention to address that. But then if you're using sound, if you grab mine or anybody else's that's out there, a third chakra meditation, focus on drawing in healing energy to your adrenal glands while you're doing the meditation, setting the intention to clear out the energetic stagnation, allow the murkiness, so if you visualize like murky water, allow that to dissolve and become crystalline as you're drawing in that energy to your crown. Those are the general meditations I would look at. Another holistic approach that I would recommend is find a good five-element acupuncturist. I've done a lot of work with five-element acupuncturists over the years. And when you're looking at balancing qi and addressing things like adrenals, they're really, really a great resource for something like that.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. You're welcome.
Thank you.
So with the adrenals then, it seems to be, or, you know, any major function, even if it's the lungs, I mean, I guess what I've noticed is with playing the didgeridoo is that I've overcome my asthma and stuff because I do breathe deeper than I had before, you know, and it's more of a consistent rhythmic breathing versus, you know, erratic breathing.
Yeah, breathing is something that we don't think about, we take for granted, and most of us do it totally wrong because we take really shallow breaths into our chest. And what we want to be doing is taking deep breaths down into our diaphragm and letting our bellies fall open. And you know, culturally, we're discouraged from allowing our bellies to fall out because everybody wants a flat stomach. But what that really does is pushes all of those organs up into your diaphragm and up into your lungs and cuts off your lung capacity by about, you know, a third, and making your breath shallow, which reduces the level of oxygen that you have in your circulatory system, getting to your muscles and your organs. That increases blood pressure, increases heart rate. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that you can mitigate just by breathing properly.
Yeah, and I still don't know how to get it across to my pulmonologist because he's like, you know, my associates aren't going to agree with what you're doing, and especially now that you've gone off all the meds and you're just doing the didgeridoo. And I said, well, then let them come in and see me and talk to me, you know, when I'm in the office, because I said, I don't need the meds anymore and I'm not going to take them just for no reason, you know. And he's just like, well, I've never seen anyone go from severe asthma to not having it hardly at all now.
That's
and
amazing.
I said, well,
that
it has to do with
really
the breathing.
Absolutely. When you're taking deeper breaths also, you're detoxifying your body greater. Things like asthma and allergic responses, you know, they still haven't fully determined to what level built-up toxicity causes, you know, allergic response and asthma response. So the more, if you're taking shallow breaths and you're not allowing your blood, your lungs to detoxify properly, and you're building up toxins in your body, that can increase symptomatic responses as well.
Exactly. And so each different chakra has different things that it works on. Can you kind of go through the chakras as far as what reasons you would use, you know, the root chakra and the, you know, and solar plexus and heart and throat and...
Absolutely. So this is going to be a big generality. And there's a great breakdown on my website at ditchtherapy.com under the chakra and sound section that'll go into it in a little more detail, or cite a couple books. But so starting at first chakra, you're dealing with the issue of safety and security of self and family. And that's the emotional component of what the chakra addresses. The physical side of it can, you may see symptoms of disease showing up inside of bones, joints, immune system, ligaments. Those are all things that can be affected by first chakra. Second chakra is all of our reproductive organs. It sits 2 inches below 2 inches into the pelvis. And that chakra is the chakra that deals with our relationships, balancing the relationship between people, our relationship with work, jobs, money, all of those things. So and in that chakra, you'll see everything from prostate and testicular disorders, fibroids will come up in that chakra. You'll have, and when I've done work with fibroid clients, you'll see that, and I did a gynecologist that we collaborate with each other, and every single fibroid case, there's been some sort of abuse trauma that's occurred. And the fibroid is actually the encapsulation of the emotional stagnation from the abuse trauma. And so you work to release the trauma, and then we've had fibroids dissolve, rupture, and be removed surgically, but they haven't come back, which is an important thing. Third chakra, which we were just talking about with the caller, that's the chakra of self-esteem, self-image, self-worth. You'll have everything from addictive behaviors can come up in this chakra. compulsive behaviors, like anorexia, bulimia, are all things that can affect and show up inside of this chakra. Heart chakra is the heart and lung area. It's the to love or be loved. And things like joy, nurturance, compassion are all things that affect this chakra, or the absence thereof can adversely affect it. When you have overwhelming grief, and you'll see the clearest example of this is when you see couples that have been together for 30, 35 years plus, and one of them pass away, and within a few months to less than a year later, you see that the other partner passes away unexpectedly. And there's a professor from Harvard who wrote a book called The Cure Within, A History of Mind-Body Medicine. Her name is Dr. Ann Harrington. She devotes a whole chapter of a book to this, of her book to this, and discussion of what used to be diagnosed or put on the death certificates as death of a broken heart, love birds. Those were things that they used to put on the death certificate. Throat chakra, it's our inner and outer throat. This is our communication and our listening, and just can affect everything from our cervical spine, TMJ, you can see, also our thyroid, and that part of the endocrine system can be affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
And then third eye, which is right between the center of the eyebrows. This is our ability to perceive and bring into being. So we not only we see our world into existence through the third eye, it's also what all of the intuitives and mediums use so that they can communicate with the spirit world. That's the connection with third eye. I do a lot of work with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
With third eye, interestingly enough, when something happens, a trauma like that happens, and we're visualizing, and third eye will go off the rails in PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty hard. Crown chakra at the top of the skull, and this is our connection to chi, prana, divine source, our higher consciousness. And this is the chakra that if we're so far out of touch with our life purpose, we can end up with some sort of catastrophic illness, accident, something that serves as a wake-up call to get our life back on course.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's also very interesting in the way it all works together on a natural rhythm that is pretty much a not man-made, but nature makes the majority of the instrument and then man finishes it.
Yes, very much so. it's dead on.
Can you explain to the listeners how a didgeridoo is made or how it becomes into being?
Sure. So typically, again, when you hear someone mention a didgeridoo, they're usually talking about a piece of eucalyptus tree trunk that's been naturally hollowed out by termites. But you can play pretty much anything that's a hollow tube. So when I teach my students,
mm-hmm.
I actually use a 46-inch piece of PVC, inch and a quarter PVC that's been fitted with a beeswax mouthpiece. Then
mm-hmm.
there's some people use bamboo. There's agave didgeridoos. But at the end of the day, what they all have in common is they're all hollow tubes. But from the eucalyptus standpoint, they eucalyptus grows like a weed and will grow back from the root system. And there's a species of termite, a couple species of termite that in Australia that will use the eucalyptus tree as its home. And they'll pour through the center, and an Aboriginal didgeridoo maker will go out into a eucalyptus stand and start listening to the tree by tapping on it or other means that they use and have been passing down for thousands of years for harvesting. And we'll then take cut the didgeridoo out or cut the tree down, and then clear out the termite condo that's inside of it, and go through a finishing process, a cleaning process, and then fit the mouthpiece with beeswax. And the mouthpiece diameter that I use is about 32 millimeters, or an inch and a quarter, is about standard, which is why that inch and a quarter piece of PVC at 46 inches, which it gives you the key of D, which is about the tenor sax of digits, is a great start to learn how to play. But yeah, they're pretty simple and straightforward instruments. There are some archaeologists who believe that the first didgeridoos were probably made out of bamboo. And years ago, I had a really tough time swallowing this because I was a pretty big eucalyptus purist. But then after talking to actually my mother, who is Filipino, and some other Southeast Asians, and finding out that that Southeast Asia, the Philippines, they all have a form of the didgeridoo. And when they did the Human Genome Project, they determined that the Australian human genome came out of Southeast Asia and the Philippines. That kind of led me to believe that, well, that makes sense with why the Filipinos have a bamboo version of the didgeridoo, and the Southeast Asians do both bamboo and board wood. So the estimates are anywhere as low, which are 2,500 years, which that's a flawed estimate for a variety of reasons, to as old as 40 to 80,000 years for how long the instrument's been around for. It's one of the earliest instruments known to man, for sure.
Yeah, I just love the resonation of the whole thing, and a way that blends in nature, or blends in a room, where it kind of gives that vibration that you get from the didgeridoo. And when that vibration is working on someone, is it due to the sound of it or the vibration of it?
Well, sound is vibration, so you could say all of the above.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of sound that's working on the person that you're not even hearing. So you have your subtle energy system, which is, we still can't fully nail down. We know that it's there, but, what is consciousness? What is the subtle energy system? But we know that it vibrates. It emits a frequency. And those frequencies, when they go out of tune, and whether that be from various forms of energetic or emotional stagnation, that out-of-tune vibration is no longer resonating in the key of that energy center. So what I'm doing with the didgeridoo, and it's the same thing that a tuning fork practitioner or singing bowl practitioner will do, when we play a frequency that's in tune, it will take a frequency that is out of tune but close enough to being in tune, and it'll bring that back up to that natural in-tune vibration. So like the caller with the adrenal issue, where she may have a stagnation that's causing the adrenal glands to not function properly, when she does a didgeridoo meditation or singing bowl meditation, for the time during and maybe 10 to 14 days after, depending on how the effort she's hanging on to energy, but in traditional Chinese medicine, you'll see effects of treatments will last 10 to 14 days. What you're doing is you're training that area to now resonate in tune, or in frequency of what it was before. And that's what you're working to accomplish when you're doing all forms of holistic work with people.
And can you give the listeners your contact information again as we're getting close to the end of the show?
Absolutely. So my sound therapy website is DIDGE therapy, therapy .com. You can Google my name, Joseph Carringer, JOSEPHCARRINGER, and find me as well. And all of the music that we heard today is also available on iTunes, Amazon, any one of the download sites that are out there. And the musical work that I do with Josh Harris, you can also find at cablesyndicate.com, cablesyndicate.com.
Well, very good. Thank you so very much for the interview today and giving us the information in regards to the didgeridoo that I'm sure a lot of my listeners didn't know about. And listeners, you can reach me at searchersroadmap@gmail.com. That's where you can send suggestions. Or if you want to be a host or a guest on the show, go on ahead and get a hold of me. And with that, we're going to close today. I'll be back tomorrow at noon Daylight Standard Time with Katya Gale on Searchers Roadmap. So have a wonderful day and continue to make it as awesome as possible. Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
You're very welcome.